Hi, my name is Ben Armstrong.
Hi, this is David Koch.
My name is Thomas Maurer.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar.
Hi, my name is Lana Montgomery.
Hi, I'm Seth Warres.
Hi, I'm Aaron Thomas.
I'm Jess Dodson.
Hi, I'm Rocky Heckman.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff.
Hi, I'm Troy Hunt.
Hello, this is Wally Mead.
My name is Reid Purvis.
Hi, I'm Lars Klink.
Hi, my name is Alan Birchall.
Hi, I'm Adam Fowler.
Hi, I'm Scott Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
All the latest Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations. It's a Need to Know podcast. All thanks to the CIA Ops patron community. The Need to Know podcast. Catch us on Twitter and Facebook, N2K Podcast, and online at ciaops.podbean.com.
Welcome along to the Need to Know podcast. My name is Robert Crane, and you join me for episode 256. For those of you who are a little bit techie-minded, you may notice that we are now in our 16-bit mode, having graduated from the 8-bit mode. We are now at episode 256, so we're into the 16 bits. If you do need to contact me or provide any feedback, you can do that on the Twitter at DirectorCIA. Also, you've got an email, director@ciaops.com, and encourage you to follow along on day-to-day events at my blog, blog.ciaops.com. Now, with that, we've had a lot of announcements come out of Microsoft Ignite. There is no way that I'm going to be able to do them all justice. So what I'll do is I'll try and pick the ones that I think are the most interesting and also provide the best summary for people. I'll make sure that the links are in the show notes so you can go back and have a look at those for yourself. I encourage you to do that. But again, lots and lots of information has been brought to us thanks to Microsoft Ignite. A couple of weeks ago, I thought I'd give it a week or two to let things settle down and then give you a bit of a summary, which is what I'm doing now. I would suggest if you do want to get the best overview of all the information that has occurred with Microsoft Ignite 2020, you go and have a look at the Book of News. So the Book of News is now a website. It has links to all the blogs. It has links to all the videos. You can look at the individual topic items. You can drill down. It really should be your reference if you're keen to keep up to date with what's happening in the Microsoft world now that we are post-Ignite. So again, the link will be in there for you to have a look, but that would be the starting point. You can drill into things of interest in Azure or Microsoft 365, Teams, and so on. So don't overlook the importance of having a look at the Microsoft Ignite Book of News. Now, of course, the Microsoft Ignite 2020 site is still available. You'll find that at myignite.microsoft.com. There is a large amount of pre-recorded sessions. They're all available for you on demand. You can sort and locate those via topic area. And again, they'll be available on an ongoing basis. Encourage you to take advantage of those, work through them. You can drill down by topic and then do the topic. You can drill down by product and so on. So I would, again, recommend that as something you bookmark and work through the sessions when you can. I certainly do that on a regular basis. I'll look to keep track of all the items and all the sessions that I attend. And I'll make that available on my GitHub so that people can get a link. Because a lot of the videos are basically also streamed directly from YouTube. So much easier, I find, to go straight to the YouTube link. So I will look at maintaining that link for people. But in the meantime, myignite.microsoft.com, go and have a look at some of the sessions. The great thing is, once they're recorded now, you can watch them at double speed or whatever and get through them twice as quick. Now, a couple of really key announcements, I think, is that there is now new management capabilities for Microsoft Defender Antivirus in Microsoft 365 Business. So this is one of those reporting consoles we've been waiting to end up in Microsoft 365 Business. And what this is going to do is it's going to allow you to report and view the endpoint situation when it comes to your devices that are running Defender. So it's going to give you a nice roll-up. It's going to allow you to look at the threats that are happening on the endpoints, you know, which machines are up to date, which machines may need some attention given that there were threats detected and so on. So I think this really largely completes the major piece around Microsoft 365 Business Premium. This is what we were missing. So now it's a absolutely fantastic product that covers everything we need. We're going to expect to see this to improve over time, but this was a major component that was missing. So again, really recommend for those of you who are interested in that to go and have a look at this post here about these new reporting capabilities and the ability to work with Defender Antivirus directly inside the Microsoft 365 console. So that's fantastic. Another really important announcement for MSPs out there is Microsoft 365 Lighthouse. So this is going to provide the ability to manage multiple tenants in a much more straightforward way. So we've had Azure Lighthouse around for a little while now, but we're now going to get the same capability with Microsoft 365. So again, in preview, you can sign up for the preview, keep track of what's going on, but it gives you nice dashboards, nice overviews, great visibility and accessibility into any customers, tenants that you are working with. There's video that you can look at to see what it's actually like, but certainly love the dashboards, the trending over time. And again, because this has all been moved into the normal Microsoft 365 console, is going to make access and use much, much easier. So again, if you are an MSP, you're looking to manage multiple tenants, go and have a look at that blog post and have a read through. And hopefully that's not far away from appearing in people's tenants. Now, as you would appreciate, there have been lots and lots of announcements, especially around things like Teams, you know, in SharePoint and so on, and OneDrive. So what I've tried to do here is put in the best summary post here. Now, the one that I've included here around seven ways that Microsoft's empowering every person to thrive will cover off some of the new stuff in Teams. So we're getting, for example, new Together Mode backgrounds. So we can have now a coffee shop, we can have a classroom, all different options there. We're also getting breakout rooms. So what that means is you can start with a session where everybody's involved, and then you can allocate them and move them into smaller breakout rooms, and then again bring them back into the main session. So that's going to be really, really handy. We've also got the ability to get a recap of the meeting. So the recap is typically going to have things like, you know, all the conversation, the Q&A, but also some of the translations and the inclusions of what people have said in the meeting. So it's going to be able to take, you know, on-demand notes for you as well. So that's going to be really, really handy. We're also hopefully going to see shortly the ability to have attendee registration and automated email. So rather than having to do this all manual, this will be part of the system, so people can register themselves, and that will be taken care of the system as well. And again, Microsoft is scaling up Teams to soon support up to 20,000 participants. So again, the demand there is obviously growing, and Microsoft's answering the call for that. Now, one of the other things I really liked was this new Homesite app. Now, what that means is that underneath Teams, when it comes to the storage, has always been SharePoint and the capability to work with files. What I suppose has been difficult to get to has been the other SharePoint capabilities, like, you know, the intranet side, the reporting, the news articles, and so on. Now, having a dedicated app that we can attach either across the top or on the left-hand side of Teams means that people can just click on that, and the SharePoint experience will be brought into Teams in a viewing style session there. I think that's going to provide, you know, the capability to unlock a lot more SharePoint for others. So I think it's a smart move, because what we've seen is people getting used to the concept of accessing their files in the Teams interface, and now they're going to roll in the other SharePoint power and capabilities inside Teams as well with this new app. So again, watch out for that coming to your environment shortly. Now, a very interesting add-on I thought in Teams was this concept of well-being. So they're working with Headspace around the meditation side of things. They're also doing something called a virtual commute, where what they're finding is that people used to have a commute to work, and then they could ease into their day. That has gone away given our current situation. So Microsoft's bringing that concept back and integrating that into Teams. Very interesting to see how that works and what effect that does have. A lot more analytics, a lot more reporting around the engagement interaction when it comes to Teams. And also, obviously, the security has been lifted as well. Lots of announcements on that. We're also seeing things like Microsoft Edge on Linux now being available, if that's your cup of tea. And I would strongly recommend you have a look at the keynote that Jeff Tepper provided around this collaboration environment. So again, have a look at that blog post, lots of good information in there. Now, as I mentioned, again, this concept of well-being is beginning to be rolled into Teams. Some nice new features there. We've also got the capability to create our own custom buttons. For example, custom acknowledgements for people. So lots and lots of things that have been added there that I would suggest you have a look at, and have a look at integrating. I mean, many of these new features are added, and you find a lot of people simply don't take full advantage of them. Now, on the security side, I think one of the big exciting things that I saw was that we now have an agent, a Defender ATP agent for our iOS devices. So we can now put a Defender endpoint application on our iOS devices, and we can then report those into the Defender console. Now, again, Defender has undergone a bit of a name change, so it was a bit confusing, I suppose, for people to have Defender and then Defender ATP and Azure ATP. So Microsoft is now rolling it all under the Defender brand. So we'll see Defender for endpoints and so on. So we'll see that sort of change. We'll see Defender for Azure and so on. So just be mindful of that. None of the technologies change, but again, Microsoft's trying to simplify the naming convention around its Defender endpoints. But if you want, you can now have a Defender agent on your iOS and also on your Android devices. I have them both installed here, working quite well. I can see them reported in the console. They are probably a little bit basic, but remember that they're still in preview and it's going to require a little bit of development, but it's good to see that they are there and you can now get some idea of what's going on, that you can also mitigate any threats, the growing amount of threats that are out there. So again, go and have a read of the blog post, put that on your devices, have a play with them, and they're going to continue over time to improve. The other interesting one was the first product from Project Cortex. Now, Project Cortex, I think, was announced probably about 12 months ago. The concept is to bring smarter intelligence around information management and presenting that to people. The first product out of that is called SharePoint Syntex. It's probably easier to go and have a look at the video and understand what that is all about. But for example, the demo that I saw was they took a number of documents, say legal contracts that were in a fairly standard format, had common fields in location like, you know, the name of the business and so on, and the contract length. And once they trained Syntex with that, they could then take additional documents of the same sort of format and drag and drop them into a document library, and the metadata would then be filled out based on that learning that they had in the environment. So we expect to see more come out around this Project Cortex, this overarching technology Microsoft has, but sort of the very first component called Syntex is now available. It's available from October 1. So again, go and have a look at it if you're interested in that sort of thing. It will be an add-on or will be aimed at the higher end SKUs initially, but I think this speaks to, you know, the thinking that Microsoft has down the track as to working with a lot of these traditional paper documents or, you know, systems that can't necessarily easily be converted into the modern environment. So I encourage you to go and have a look at that. Keep an eye on Project Cortex in general. Now, there were some announcements around the SharePoint admin and migration. Again, have a look at the link that I've included there. One of the big items, I think, is the ability to monitor the sync status on clients. So that will be coming into the console, giving you the ability to overlook the whole tenant and see if there are any syncing errors, how much data is being synced, and control that as well. There's also improvements in the migration side as well. And what we're going to see is the OneDrive settings are going to also move into the SharePoint Admin Center. So they've been sort of in their own console for a little while there. They will be moved into the SharePoint Admin Center, giving it more consistency as well. And of course, remember, there are lots and lots of sessions on all of this. So if you do want a deeper dive, they are linked inside those blog posts as well. So another one that I thought that was really interesting was the fact that Microsoft is now, it's talking about a new product potentially called Project Nucleus. Now, the idea with this is basically to do some local caching of SharePoint sites, teams, lists, that sort of thing, and sort of synchronize that up to allow you to work offline. Now, not a lot of details there. It was sort of the last thing in Jeff Tepa's session. Not a lot of detail on that, but this is what we're thinking kind of, line in the sand there. This is where we're going. It'll be very interesting to see. Hopefully, like I said, it'll be based on technologies like the OneDrive Sync, but it will allow people to, obviously work offline successfully, make changes, and then update information into the cloud. So again, very interesting to see how this works. If it does come off as Microsoft is hoping, we should see improved performance and speed around this collaborative environment that Microsoft is building. So again, stay tuned for that. Still early days for that environment, but again, keep your eye on it, keep your ear out for this Project Nucleus. Have a look at what Jeff Tepa said about all that. Now, unfortunately, like I said, there's just so much news coming out of Ignite. We're still digesting it, but hopefully they're the highlights. Please go and have a look at all the links that will be included in the show notes. Remember that you can always hit me up on the Twitter at DirectorCIA and follow my Twitter account there, where I post a lot of the news there. So that's another good way to keep up what's happening from all these announcements. You can also contact me, director@ciaops.com, if you would like. And don't forget to stay on track at blog.ciaops.com for some analysis on all of this technology that is happening in the cloud sphere with Microsoft. But with that, why don't we get into this? So I'm joined by Lars Klint. Welcome along, Lars.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
So Lars is a little bit unique, and we've brought him onto the podcast to speak about something which I think that probably has never been mentioned on my podcast anyway, and probably on very few other podcasts out there. We've asked Lars to come on to talk about llamas. Now, I'll let Lars introduce himself, who he is, what he does, and make sure that we've got this straight, that we are talking about the same sort of llamas, not some sort of special code word from Microsoft. So, Lars, why don't you basically give us a bit of intro to yourself and also to the llamas?
Sure thing. No, you are correct. We are talking about actual llamas. But yes, I am. My name's Lars. I'm a Microsoft MVP, such as yourself, Rob, and I've been a few years now, 6 or 7, I think it is, and it's that's actually mostly of my identity has come from being the MVP with Microsoft. So for those of you who don't know the MVP program, it's sort of like hey, I know a lot about Microsoft. I like talking about it, and I contribute a lot to the community. So Microsoft says, hey, that's cool. We'll give you this award as a sort of tip of the hat, and that it opens doors and it does many other things, but most of all, it is a community award. So I'm pretty proud of that because I do like to interact with the community. And that is also where LlamaCam comes in. But yeah, I'll get to that in just a second. I work for a company called Cloud Guru. I do training content, so online videos of various formats and lengths and sizes and all stuff, mostly centered around Azure, so Microsoft Azure, the cloud technology from Microsoft, and that's my day job. I do all these other things as well. I collect classic cars and I take them apart and I try and repair them, and I used to have 10 thumbs and I've tried now renovating a house, so I think I've got about 6 thumbs left. I'm learning, but part of my lockdown project, because we all locked down, especially in Australia, we can't go anywhere, so because of COVID-19, I thought, how do I put a smile on people's faces? How do I somehow share some of the area that I live in? Because I live on a farm in rural Victoria, which is in the south of Australia. And how do I share my passion for cloud and networking and technology and llamas? We have llamas on the property. There's about 25 of them or something. So I tried to kind of combine all of this into a project that I could do sort of in my spare time, because I thought it would be funny and it would be a nice technical exercise. And it might actually bring a bit of joy to many people that are stuck at home, so they could look at my llamas. So LlamaCam is exactly what it sounds like. It's a live streaming feed of my paddock, and usually there's some llamas on it. I'm just looking out my window now. Yes, they are on the paddock. And the technical issue I had was sort of manyfold. One was obviously, how do I film them? So I got some Unify cameras from Ubiquiti. I networked my whole farm, so now I have about 5 acres of Wi-Fi coverage. But more than that, how do I get the llamas on the internet? How do I share them with people? Because the main hurdle probably is I'm on a satellite connection. So not only do I have lag and limited data, and the connection is actually not bad, but it's not fast. How do I get all of that to sort of work together? And then how do I stream it? So that was sort of the technical challenge of figuring out how to get all of this to kind of work together. So I ended up using an RTSP, so real-time streaming protocol feed, which each of these cameras give out. And I then produce it in OBS, which is I think it's a common streaming platform. I'm all new to a lot of this. Open Broadcast Studio, or software, Open Broadcast Software, OBS. They have a free version of their OBS Studio that I use. So I put the Llama cams in there. I then push this up to Azure. So I've learned how to use Azure Media Services to not only host the stream, but also store the last 12 hours of video, I think it is now. So if you come to llamacam.com.au and you don't see any llamas, you can rewind and try and find them yourself and so on. But that was, figuring out how to use get the right bandwidth to work with this, because I have 100 gigabytes of data a month for everything. So that's my entire pool of data that I can use. And then trying to find out how to stream it without using all of it in one day, but also so I can still stream a movie if I want to, or you know, use Zoom for that matter. So that was an interesting technical challenge, but I've learned a lot, especially around Azure Media Services, which I didn't really know existed.
So I think there's a far more important question that we need to ask than that, right? Now,
okay.
The really important thing I'm sure that all the listeners are keen to know is why llamas and not alpacas.
So that's a good question. To be honest, the llamas are not ours. They're our neighbors, but they live on our paddocks. So that was sort of the first thing. Okay, I'm stuck with the llamas. But there is some difference between the two. Alpacas are smaller. They're more fluffy. But in general, there's not a lot of difference between the two. Like, it's not like dogs and cats. They are similar in temperament. They're similar in looks, and they're similar in sort of, you know, how they react and how they behave. So I think it was more coincidence more than anything. I have nothing against alpacas.
Well, I think part of the benefit really was the first part, that you're getting free alpacas. Like free Azure credits as an MVP. So again, obviously the two work together some very unplanned ways. So that's good that you've put that extra time into it. Now, obviously let's turn our attention probably to the more technical side, which is what people are wanting to know, is that, you know, where would you see in what you've learned, let's say, where would be a practical application for this? I mean, it's all been fun and games to an extent. Obviously, you've done a lot of learning, but if you were to take that learning away and say, right, this would apply in this business example, do you have any way that you can sort of map that, do you think?
Well, so the Azure Media Services, they're very, very much based around having events. So the way that it's set up from Microsoft's side is that you create an event. Now, my event is infinite. It never ends because I stream it. So I turn the camera on and off with basically a batch script and Windows scheduler, so that I don't stream, for example, when it's dark, because there's no point, but also not to preserve data. I don't want to stream all the time. So that's part of it. But the Azure side of it is that it's an event. So the way that they've set it up is that if you have, say, a recurring event, you have a weekly event, which could be, say, that could be your meetup. It could be that you have a product demonstration from, you know, if you have a product company, whatever it might be, you can set up these events and you can stream them on time. And the cool thing is that Azure kind of manages all of this for you. Just like if you were streaming to YouTube, YouTube would handle all of the infrastructure and everything. Now, the cool thing, of course, with Azure is that you can then integrate it with all the other Azure services that you have. So one of my future plans is to, I'm working on it right now. I don't know much about it, but is to put this stream through an AI process and tell you when the llamas are there. So you could interact, you can integrate the media service with other Azure services, and you could do that for your business as well. So if you have if you wanted to tell people, hey, at a specific point in time, you can go and look at this product in this stream or whatever, you can have those bookmarks, integrate with your app or your mobile phone app or your notifications or whatever it is. So there is that whole ecosystem that you get out of using the Azure Media Services that you wouldn't get with, say, YouTube or Facebook or one of the other streaming services. So I kind of found that quite interesting.
All right. So what about the Azure service, the cognitive service that will allow us to translate Llama to English? Is that been incorporated into your website yet?
It's getting there. I have created a model. So I have trained a model with cognitive, cognitiveservices.io, which is the Azure side of things. And I've trained a model that can recognize llamas, customvision.io, that's what it is. So customvision.ai, I'm going to get this right. And that now will recognize a llama. So I can put a still from the feed through it, and it'll tell you whether there's a llama there or not. So that works quite well. I do think it would probably say an alpaca is a llama as well. It's not that accurate, but it'll tell you if there's a llama on the paddock. And that was surprisingly easy. Training a model is, I've never done any AI stuff before, is much easier than I thought. I only had 20 sample images of a llama and not a llama. So you put through what's not a llama, like a horse and a zebra and whatever else. And it gave me surprisingly accurate results from everything else I threw at it after that. So it's I'm not quite sure what goes on under the hood, but as a user or as a technical person, it's not hard to set up a model for AI. Now, my next challenge, of course, is to use that endpoint, which is exposed when you have your model, and then feed my own images through it every 5 or 10 minutes or whatever it might be. I want to check if there's llamas there. So that's coming. I'm not quite done with it yet.
I'm certainly glad to hear that cognitive services can recognize the difference between a zebra and a llama. That's very important to get right. Now, what's the cost of this? Again, everybody's really scared out there about the cost of Azure, uh-huh. and you're talking about streaming data and doing all this, yep. this stuff, over the time. And, what sort of costings are we looking at? Did it surprise you that it was, in what it actually cost? Was it more or was it less? I mean, what was your feeling when we come to the sort of the dollars and cents side of it?
Yeah. Initially, I was trying to figure out how to even do this. And I was looking at Facebook and I was looking at bespoke streaming services that do this as a business. And I was looking at Azure as well. And coming back to Azure, I chose it as well because I get free credits with MVP. So it's kind of, hey, there's a little bit of free stuff here. But also because it was a technology I wanted to learn. But the cost of it, as far as I can figure out, is $69 a month for a standard streaming event. And that doesn't scare me that much, considering I can use this 24/7 if I want to.
So is that cost based on what volume download or time? What's sort of the key variable there?
So there's two different types of services. I'll just bring up the pricing calculator here because that makes it much easier to talk about. But there are two different types of streaming services. There's a standard and there's a premium. I'm just using the standard because I don't need all the bells and whistles, which I can't remember now what are. Again, this is all very new to me as well. But for the standard Azure Media Service, you just get one price because you just get one product essentially. And let me just see here. Yeah, there's premium streaming units and there's a standard streaming endpoint, which is what I have. That is $64.50 US a month. And that's just a flat fee. Then you can also choose premium streaming units where you can scale your streaming service up and down quite significantly. And you pay $139 US a month per streaming unit. Now, I haven't looked into a lot of what that does, not yet. But there are, you can certainly get into trouble if you just wind that up. No question about it. But if you start with the standard streaming endpoint, which is perfectly fine for just a few users and for as sort of a simple streaming scenario, $64 US a month, which does not seem like a lot to me.
So that's independent of any data transfer. So that's sort of inclusive of data transfers.
Yes, as far as I can tell, that's both ingress, egress, okay. All of that is included in it. There's nothing that says, again, it's a little bit, as all cloud pricing is, it's a little bit tricky to get just the exact right pricing out of it. But there's no upfront costs or anything with it. And all I've had 2,500 people streaming at the same time, and that seemed to be just fine. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, it's impressive. So apart from the cost, how long did it take to sort of, you know, make it happen? Not just the design and the thinking, but, you know, implementing the services, adding, collecting media servers, putting the cameras out. Sort of how long did that sort of take in this project?
Yeah, so the cameras is part of a greater upgrade of my infrastructure. So I had, for the longest time, I had repeater routers. So I had a TP-Link router and an Asus router and a Netgear or something like that, and they were all repeating each other, and it was an absolute mess. So I started upgrading that to becoming a mesh farm Wi-Fi network, and part of that was I dragged 450 meters of cables around in roof spaces and all sorts to put up access points and hook up cameras. I've created a solar powered camera at my gate because there's no power down there. So I've done all these little projects that has nothing to do with LlamaCam, but it's all sort of built up to producing the infrastructure to make sure the LlamaCam can work, because I've got cameras in the middle of a paddock. So that's probably taking about 3 months. But once I had that, doing the actual coding, setting a website and creating an Azure media service, it was 2 or 3 days. It didn't take long at all. Azure is reasonably good at kind of guiding you through what you need to do. So you set up your streaming or your media service resource, and it goes, oh, would you like a streaming event, or would you like, you know, a hosted video event, or what would you like? So, you know, clicking all the buttons take a little bit of time. You're figuring out what does what, and then you just create a streaming event. You get an endpoint and you point OBS at that. It's not super complicated. It's easier than I thought.
Okay, so obviously you need to have the right infrastructure, the correct cameras, and again, maybe some networking around that, which is, again, pretty easy these days. Generally, might be, in your case, a little bit of extra work for the distances. But then once you've got that, we can connect that into Azure. The services are basically there, ready for you to consume. They're nice and cheap, relatively speaking there. Now, obviously, the benefit is if you can put that onto a front end. So the front end that you've got on the web where people can come and visit directly on the website, was that a difficult thing to actually publish that out on a live website? Is that also hosted in Azure?
It is hosted in Azure. I weighed up two approaches, and I kind of chose the cutting corner versions initially, because the website was, yeah, sure, that's where you'd go and watch the llamas and whatever, but it wasn't the actual goal of the project initially. So the website was just the medium for me to transmit all the other work. So I ended up setting up a WordPress site. And I chose WordPress because it's so damn simple. You press a button, and I only needed two pages. I need a page, the front, showing the live video, and then I had another one, which is some llama trivia. My plan, though, is... And that's hosted on Azure. So that's an Azure app service that hosts WordPress as well. But my plan is to change that into a .NET Core application, so I have much more control over how it looks and what it does, and just professional pride in it as well. I don't really want to have a WordPress site if I don't have to. And then I use .NET Core, ASP.NET Core, quite a bit on other projects. So that seems like a logical step for me to use that. And I have this idea of wanting to provide notifications for people saying, hey, the llamas are here. I can do that much easier if it's through .NET Core, because I have more control over what the backend can do and things like that. So yeah, no, it wasn't hard, but I also took the shortest route.
Okay. So again, it's quite easy to get this proof of concept, let's call it, up and running, and then obviously refine from there. Now, moving maybe more into the business side of it and using this as an example, would you agree that probably one of the best ways to, you know, learn about the Azure side of it, the infrastructure as a service, the PaaS stuff, and what we've talked about, that a project like this is a really good way to learn because you've got a defined goal that you're trying to reach. I mean, what I see is most people approach Azure and say, right, you know, today I'm going to learn Azure. Right, you know, where, you know, what do I search? I go, you know, what is Azure? And they work through docs.com from the top to the bottom. This to me would seem a much better approach. In your experience, would that be a, you know, a good approach, do you believe?
Absolutely. I've always said that to people that I try and help with, well, let's say Azure as an example or other technologies, is that find something that you think is interesting or entertaining or helpful, just some project that you actually want to do. Because I think very few people want to know how a media service works on Azure. Like it's not the end goal, but it's, hey, if I need to solve this other project, then I can use the knowledge of that say media service. Or, you know, how an app service work or how Cosmos DB work. But that in itself is not as interesting as wrapping it around a project that makes sense. So whatever it is that you're interested in, I happen to have llamas. It might be that you have, you know, a knitting channel and you want to, you know, produce AI models based on what your knitting looks like and, you know, deduct animals from it. I don't know. Whatever it is you think could be an interesting way of putting your interests and your hobbies and your professional skills, whatever, into a project, it makes it so much more engaging to learn. So, yeah, I recommend that every time. Find a project that appeals to you.
All right, so let's say that we've got a project and we've not particularly experienced in the Azure side of things. We don't know what it needs and what may be the components that are required. I mean, again, where would somebody start to get this sort of concept of, oh, I need, you know, one media service, I need two storage accounts, I need, you know, a VM to do this? Are there any, you know, resources that you'd recommend that people look at diving into to begin that quest?
Oh, of course. So the Microsoft Learn has, especially for beginners, has a lot of good content. It's a free resource on Microsoft, or is it docs.microsoft.com/learn? I believe their URL is. I may be wrong on that one, but I think that's correct. We'll put it in the show notes in any case. And start there with understanding what the cloud is like. What are the fundamental building blocks of cloud services? So you're looking at compute and networking, you know, and storage. Those are the sort of fundamental building blocks that everything else is on top. And then try then from there to understand what each of the sort of core services do. What is a VM? What does an app service do? So you get a vocabulary within the cloud provider. What is it when someone says, oh, you need an app service for that? What does that mean? You know, oh, it's just a website. Oh, all right, okay, I know now that translation. And that's probably, I would say that's the first step. If you haven't looked at cloud computing before, I would definitely start there. I am obliged, of course, to mention that I work for a training provider, A-Cloud Guru. We have lots of resources as well. But, you know, there are many, many resources. YouTube is often a good resource as well. There can be some interesting opinions thrown in some of these videos on YouTube especially, but in general it whatever learning platform you are comfortable with will have something for you, I would imagine, especially when you're starting out the first time. But it can be quite overwhelming because there is 200 and something services on Azure, I believe. It's about getting the fundamentals right. How do you talk about cloud? What is your vocabulary for it? I think that's probably the first step.
Well, I think the challenge is, as you rightly pointed out, there's, you know, the quality training obviously provided by, you know, businesses that you work for, and there's other stuff out there. And I think that's what makes it confusing for, you know, a lot of people out there is there's not this one path to learning anymore. It's, you know, the modern world, it's about, well, we can do a bit of this and a bit of that and a bit of this over here sort of thing. So as an example, let's just extract one little component out of this and just look at it from your aspect, again, being an experienced trainer. You said that you didn't have a lot of experience with the AI side of things. How did you go about learning that aspect and adding that to your vocabulary when you sort of didn't have that before?
So my first step, and I use this a lot, is that I ask people on the internet. I asked on Twitter. And I throw a tweet out that say, hey, I have this idea, where do I start? Sometimes that gives you great results, sometimes it does not. In my case, I know a guy in the Netherlands who works for Microsoft in AI. Not because I know him, that's not why he helped me, that's his job. So he helps people with AI, you know, projects and so on and whatnot. He replied. So I, all right, that's a good start. So I have some vocabulary in terms of, I have these services, I have this idea of it, how do I plug AI into it? And then he could point me in the right direction, such as customvision.ai, to start training my model. So that was sort of where I started. Then I get stuck on something and I don't know, I ask again. I think the key is to asking a lot of questions. Sometimes that question gets an answer that is, here's how to do it. Or some other times it's, here's a resource that will show you probably what you need. So there's a combination of spending some time looking, you know, reading documentation or watching a demo video or, you know, listening to a podcast or whatever it is that you prefer, how you prefer to learn. But you do need to obviously invest some time in learning how that particular resource works. But getting to where you learn could be, you know, you can ask people at work, you can ask people on the internet, you can Google it, you can look at Microsoft Learn. There's many ways of finding that first step.
All right. So obviously this is a new thing you're taking on board. Do you have any, like, you know, note-taking process? Like, you're learning all this stuff and bits and pieces. How do you fit the jigsaw to put together? Do you keep your ideas together, you know, in a physical notebook? Do you use OneNote? How do you keep sort of that information that you're beginning to accumulate that may or may not be useful somewhere along in this project?
Yeah, I use OneNote, actually. I have even my you know, I'm building a retaining wall at the moment, and I have all the measurements and the sketches and everything is in OneNote. So I use that a lot. I use that as well for this kind of project. I will write down what I think is needed. For most of the technical stuff I do, I end up writing a blog post about it, both because it helps maybe other people that are trying to get in and do a similar project or parts of it, but also because future Lars really appreciate it when you go back and read what you actually did. So you sort of you remember the steps you had to do, and they might jog your memory in doing other projects. But note taking, I'll write down URLs, I'll write down, I copy paste, you know, Twitter conversations, so I have it, so I don't have to go look for it again. Many ways of note taking, but I use predominantly OneNote to keep it all together.
Okay, well, that makes sense. But again, for those people out there who aren't looking and using some sort of tool or utility like OneNote, again, I will swear with it as well. I have so many OneNotes on so many features, searchable, it just swallows every sort of information, text, video, audio, links, absolutely fantastic. And again, I really like that I can have it on all my devices and they can be synchronized, kept up to date.
Yep.
So again, if you haven't looked at that, 100%, it's just such a great tool for capturing that learning, because there's nothing worse, I think Lars would probably agree with this, is that you do something and then a week or so later, it's like, oh, where did I put that? And that's, you know, it's that one piece of the puzzle that you need and you can't put your finger on it. And that's where obviously search comes into
one
its own.
One too many times.
It's like, I know it's here. I know it's here. It's so again, part of that, I think, is utilizing a lot of these tools, which come as part of the Microsoft 365 environment. And obviously, you know, using tools like there are in Azure as well. All right. So you've mentioned briefly what you see the future of you know, Llama Cam is. I mean, have you got any more sort of plans and dreams of what you want to roll this project out, or do you see maybe taking this and building another project out there? I mean, what's sort of the next project that Lars has got on his plate there?
I definitely want to do the AI component to it. I think that's quite an interesting exercise. I'm not sure. It depends a little bit on what the audience wants. I'm happy to kind of follow what people want to see from it. I'm definitely going to do something around the notification side of it, because I can only currently cover maybe 50%, 40% of the actual paddocks. So often the llamas are just not there. So some way of using the AI component to go, hey, you know what, there's a llama now, and maybe that way get people to watch it. And I don't know, maybe in a year everybody wants to watch llamas. No, maybe no one wants to. I don't know. I'm happy to kind of go with the flow on this. I do like to plan my things, but in this case, I think it also depends a lot on how it's consumed, what the next steps could be.
So we expect to see we expect to see the Internet of Llamas coming shortly. Is that the suggestion for you? That's probably the best way to put a little tracking dot on every llama and then say, you know.
You're not the first one to suggest that. It's interesting.
I think I'll be the last one. Last one either.
No. I am definitely going down the IoT route, though.
So maybe you can run a quiz, you know, llama cam, you know, help the AI get smarter. Is this a llama? No, kangaroo. Is this a llama? No, giraffe. So maybe something like that, a voting system.
Yeah, giraffe.
You know, just to make things interesting. Now, speaking of, from the business side of it, let's look at the end result here. You put it out there, people are hopefully viewing it. What's the reaction you've had from, you know, people you know that have known that you've shown the project to, and just a random person who's come across, you know, Llama Cam out there? What's the sort of the reaction and the sort of feedback you've got from now that you've got the project, you know, up and working?
Yeah. So I've got, I have actually my 14-year-old son, at school, he's not allowed to watch YouTube or anything, of course, but the teachers don't mind if he has Llama Cam. So he has it as the background when he's working for, like, you know, mood watching or whatever you want to call it, mood, because it's got audio on it as well, so you can hear the birds and whatever. So that's kind of one way I didn't anticipate people to use it. But it's also from people I don't know, especially on Twitter. I use Twitter a fair bit, maybe too much, some people say. And people have very interesting ideas of what this could be. So we have several people, I would say, a good proportion of the feedback has been, how do we feed the llamas? And I think that's an interesting idea. I don't know how this would work. There's many components to it. How do I don't even know what llamas would run to eat. Carrots, maybe? I'm not sure. How do I make sure I don't make him fat? How do I, like, there's many considerations to this, but I've certainly had, I've had feedback. Also people that randomly say, hey, you need to put on the hours longer because where I live is the middle of the night when it's live and I want to watch the llamas. I'm like, oh, I didn't even consider that. So yeah, there's been some interest in it, but it's my job to continue to kind of foster those ideas and kind of make it the source of a smile. It's basically all I wanted it to be, was just have people something, give people something they could smile at, because who doesn't smile at llamas, you know?
All right, so if we want to make people smile, if we want to let people look at the llamas to ensure that they're not really alpacas in disguise, where do we need to go? What do we need to look at? Where can we learn about, again, how you created all this? And then also, how can we, you know, keep up to date with what is coming in the future with Llama Cam version 5?
I bet you never thought you'd ask this on your podcast. So Llama Cam is just llamacam.com.au. There's also llamacam.com, but it looks like they started in 1997 and didn't update it. So that's not me. I am .com.au because we're in Australia. I wrote all of the bits and pieces up on, you know, the reasoning and the rationale and everything is on my blog, lastkin.com. And I don't have any social media for the llamas yet because I didn't know how this was going to go. I suspect there'll be a Llama Cam Twitter account at some point that will maybe tweet out photos or AI generated something. I'm not sure. I can definitely see that as an avenue of entertainment and interaction. But yeah, follow it on probably lastkin.com or just follow me on Twitter. I'm sure I can't shut up about it.
Make sure that you do get consent from the llamas to have their pictures put on the internet. I mean, there could be legal ramifications.
They've signed already. They've signed. So that's all good.
Right. So yeah. So once they cross the boundary into your property, though, whatever they do, it's recorded and it's legally covered. So that's the main thing. That's good to know. All right, Lars. So is there any last thing that you'd like to share with the audience, again, in regards to, you know, what the benefits of, you know, engaging in a project like this? Yes, you've obviously delivered the fun, and we'll put the links in the show notes so people can go and have a look for themselves and shout out to you and let you know what they think. But again, you know, as a summary, as a, you know, as a project and as a fulfillment process, you know, what's sort of the roundup looking back on it now that it's all up and running?
I mean, as a general thing, I hope people enjoy it. More than that, I hope it inspires people to come up with their own projects. Like, if there's something you think could be an interesting, you know, IoT project, cloud computing project, whatever it might be, some nerdy thing you want to do, I love to hear about it. I feed on all these projects that people have. A friend of mine is covering his whole house in temperature sensors and humidity sensors and garage openers, and I love following that. So anything you can kind of come up with that takes advantage of cloud computing and, you know, llamas for that matter, let me know. I'm more than very keen to hear about it.
All right. Well, I'm sure that we've inspired a competitive alpacacam.com.au to start up shortly. So there might be some friendly rivalry there. Hopefully they choose to use Microsoft technologies around that as well. Yes. So have you had any, as a last thing before we round off and thank everybody, have you had any contact or feedback from Microsoft? Has there been any noticing of the sudden downloads or viewing of llamas on the Azure?
There has been nothing that I can reveal just yet because it's not sure where it's going to go or if it's going to go. But there has been some interest and some ideas around how we might take some advantage of this, which I didn't expect, to be honest. Again, this was just my hobby project that I thought could be an interesting way for me to kind of nerd out on some things and share a bit of smiles. But yes, there has been some notice of it.
Excellent. So we can expect to see Mark Rusinovich presenting LlamaCam at the upcoming Ignite, I would assume. So I look forward to that session, and I'll start scouring the timetables for that. So
yeah, me too.
Thank you very much, Lars, for all that information. I think that's a great project. I'll make sure that all the links are up there. For people who are listening, make sure that you go and have a look, and again, have a shout out to Lars and let him know the enjoyment you've had and all the details he's gone into of setting this up. And obviously, any other questions you may have for him, make sure all those contact details are in there. I'm sure you'll be easy to find him out there on the Twitters anyway. So again, Lars, thank you very much for sharing that with us. And again, very interesting project, and it just shows you what you can achieve when you put your mind to it.
Absolutely. Thanks, Robert. Appreciate it.
All right. So that brings us to the end of another Need to Know podcast.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Microsoft 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selections available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact.